Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. In 1931, 9 African-American teenagers were falsely accused of raping 2 white women in Scottsboro, Alabama. And over the course of 2 decades, the teens were found guilty again and again in the Jim Crow South, despite the women later recanting their accusations. Now, the story of the Scottsboro Boys is on stage with a surprising soundtrack.
Tonight's a night of merriment, of laughter, songs, and jokes. I'm host and interlocutor, the master of these folks.
The music mimics that of a minstrel show, a racist popular form of theater from the 1800s where white actors performed in blackface. The musical uses this tradition too, often deliberately uncomfortably, to highlight the racial prejudice that put the boys in prison.
It's showtime, boys. Don't be nervous.
Just let those butterflies out of your cocoon.
The Scottsboro Boys is playing now through November 26th at the Speakeasy Stage Company. David Thompson is the writer of the book for the Scottsboro Boys, and he joins us now from Argo Studios in New York. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here.
It is great to have you. First of all, the idea of using such a problematic form as the minstrel show as the way to tell this story, why did you choose that framework?
Well, we always knew we wanted to tell the story about the trials of the Scottsboro Boys. We did a lot of research on the on the source material, and at that time, it was one of the first real media circuses in the country. And we found an article written by a reporter who called it out and compared it to a minstrel show.
Uh-huh.
And we thought, this is an interesting way to tell the story, because what you're doing here is taking an extraordinarily racist art form and using it to tell an extraordinary racist chapter in American history. So you've got these two things working together. But what was particularly interesting about this was it's part of our history.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way we used to be entertained. It was our American art form for over 100 years. And we thought, there's something very American about this that we think will propel the story and really amplify the messages that we're trying to deliver here.
Yeah. Well, I want to listen to a little bit more, because the story begins with the boys on the train. And in the musical, they sing this song, Commencing in Chattanooga.
Now you can take your piano and you can take your Santa Fe.
Now, at this point, early on in the story, most of the boys, except for some brothers, are actually strangers to each other.
That's right.
How did one of them, Haywood Patterson in particular, become the young man you focused on?
Well, Haywood was a character who, like all of them, was just out there looking for work. But he was also singled out during the entire process, during the trials, as the one who looked the most guilty. So he was the first one tried, and he was actually the last one to—he actually died in jail. But what was appealing about Haywood, like all the boys, he went into jail as an illiterate. Not all the boys, but he was illiterate. And he realized if he was going to survive, he had to learn how to read and write. And by the time he had died, he actually wrote a book called The Scottsboro Boy, which was published like in the early 1950s, around the time Emmett Till was murdered.
Mm.
But what was interesting was, in his case, he realized that in order to have a voice, he had to learn how to write. And then that became such a compelling character as a place to start.
So tell us a little bit more about what actually happened to these boys.
What happened was, they were thrown into jail. They were hauled off to Scottsboro. And within a couple hours, everybody was, of course, calling for their lynching. And they decided that they wouldn't have a lynching, but they would instead have a trial. The trial took just a couple days for the trial to actually be held. The boys were improperly represented by a lawyer. The lawyer was drunk most of the time. And by the time that first trial finished, they were all to die in the electric chair. And very quickly, what happened was this resonated throughout the country. It was it became a turning point in the growth of the civil rights movement and a lot of the relationships between the North and the South. How could this happen? This is not the way we see ourselves. We have to do better than this. But at the same time, no one was able to derail this incredible act of injustice.
Yeah.
And it continued on decade after decade after decade. And ironically, if you could even say that, it wasn't until 2013 that the boys were actually exonerated by the governor of Alabama, for as if that was somehow going to correct this chapter in history. But it never corrected itself.
2013.
Oh,
yeah, my goodness.
Exactly.
Wow. Now, the courtroom trial dialogue that appears in the production, in the Scottsboro Boys, it's not actually that far from the actual what was said in the courtroom during the boys' trials?
No. That was the remarkable thing. When you go back to that source material, whether it's courtroom transcripts or newspaper articles, you realize there's a language that's being used by the South to characterize who these boys are and what they've done. And it's that classic case in art where sometimes truth is even all you need to go. It's all you need in order to tell the story because you don't need to look any further. That's where we went. And a lot of the way that they their summations, the way they talked about the boys, the way they characterized who they were was pulled directly from transcripts, which some of it is quite softened because I realized we would only inflame our audiences even more if we actually were as raw as some of those conversations were.
Oh, interesting. Well, I want to return for a moment to what the form of using a minstrel show allows you to do, and how uncomfortable it allows you to make modern day audiences watching the Scottsboro Boys. Because I want to play a little bit of a song called "Southern Days," which really begins as sort of a dewy eyed tribute to the beauty of the state of Alabama.
That's right.
Don't you miss the sight of willows dripping on a balmy southern day?
Ooh.
Don't you miss the taste of julep sipping as you while that day away?
And so lots of love for Alabama and the South there, but then by the end of the song, it completely veers into a different version, a darker reality of the South.
How the sights and sounds come back to me, like my daddy hanging from a tree.
Here now, wait a minute.
Or the fire that made those crosses burn.
I don't remember that part of the song.
You know, every time I hear that, I wince, I cringe, and to think that part of me is like, how could they even possibly set this to music? But that's kind of the whole point.
It is. The reason we went to the minstrel form was at the top of the show, the boys are part of a minstrel troupe, and they're telling their story. But by the end of the show, they have rejected the minstrel form, and they are no longer willing to be participants in the falsehoods that it's built upon. Because the minstrel form was – the music was written by white men to be sung by white men in blackface about – a nostalgic time before the Civil War that never existed. So Stephen Foster, Suwannee River, my old Kentucky home. And that was our music. That was our cultural music. And at this point in the show, that mask of minstrelsy starts to drop.
Yeah.
And they begin to add their own lyrics to it to tell their own truth.
So, David, if I may ask, you, John Kander, and Fred Ebb, who did music and lyrics for the Scottsboro Boys, you're all white. So how did that sort of factor into how you think the musical has been received and even just sort of confronting the complication that, once again, the creators of this musical are white men telling the story of young black men?
Yeah. It started throughout the process with really very open conversations with the actors in rehearsals, every step of the process, every part of the show. And it was very clear. We said, we can't tell you how you feel. We can't somehow understand in our bones what you have gone through. But we can make a commitment to tell this story as honestly as we can together. And it was something that was it allowed us to have those conversations that allowed us ultimately to create the work. And I think that if there's anything that comes out of our story about this the way that we've created this piece, it is that notion of that conversation will get you to another place, but you have to make that commitment to have it.
Well, The Scottsboro Boys has been nominated multiple times for Tony Awards. It's been around for a little while. I read that the first time you did a reading of the show was the day after President Obama was elected. What does it mean to you to do this show now, I mean, in the era of Black Lives Matters?
Well, it was interesting. In 2008, when we had our first reading of it, it was the Wednesday after the Tuesday election. And we all gathered in the rehearsal room to start reading through it. And we thought, gee, this is such a great time in American history. I think everybody had this false fantasy that we were somehow entering into a post-racial dialogue. And very quickly, that has not been the case. I think what's important here is, you know, we never, as we went into this, we never started thinking this as sociologists, but just rather as storytellers who had something that we wanted to say. But I think it's about listening and having conversations and trying to move the conversation forward. And if there's anything, it's that.
Well, David Thompson is writer of the book for the musical, The Scottsboro Boys. It's playing now through November 26th at the Speakeasy Stage Company. We'll have information about that at radioboston.org. David Thompson, thank you so very much. It's a tremendous show, and we're very happy
thank
to have
you
it in Boston.
Appreciate it so much.
We'll leave you with the song Shout from The Scottsboro Boys. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.